From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on August 11th, 2011, in Des Moines, Iowa. Presidential candidate Mitt Romney was speaking to Iowa voters about why he opposed tax increases. He said the tax increases hurt people who are trying to raise families and build businesses, and that's when someone in the audience shouted, "Corporations!" The implication was clear. Romney didn't have to support raising taxes on voters. He could support raising corporate taxes. And Romney replied, quote, "Corporations are people, my friend." Some people in the audience shouted, "No, they're not." And Mr. Romney said, quote, "Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people. Where do you think it goes?" End quote. And that became a defining soundbite in the 2012 presidential election. It has also endured as a point of debate over corporate personhood. Romney's comment surely caught the eye of an organization called Move to Amend, which is aiming to dismantle the idea of corporate personhood and limit the power of money in politics. Here's what the organization says on their website. Quote, "Contrary to popular belief, we are not a self-governing people in the United States. Instead, we have been conditioned to be consumers, allowed to choose between paper or plastic at the grocery store, while the fundamental public policy decisions regarding how our society operates are made behind corporate boardroom doors. Practical solutions to the problems we face exist, but are not implemented because we, the people, are not in a position to make and execute these decisions," end quote. Next Wednesday, July 13th, the founder of Move to Amend is coming to Rochester for an event sponsored by the Rochester Pachamama Alliance community. But first, he's on the line with us. He's my guest on Connections, David Cobb. Welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
And David, by the way, I should tell our listeners, is not only with Move to Amend, he's got sort of a long and colorful career as an attorney, as an activist. He was the Green Party presidential candidate in 2004. And we're going to be talking in detail this hour about what Move to Amend is all about. I also want to welcome our guest in studio. Padme Livingstone is here. She's the facilitator for the Rochester Pachamama Alliance. Padme, welcome. And why don't you tell the audience what the Pachamama Alliance is?
Well, the first thing I'll say is, the first thing I'd like to say is I'm not the only facilitator. There are 12 of us on the core team of Pachamama Alliance here in Rochester. The Pachamama Alliance was created with a partnership with the indigenous people of the Amazon jungle in Ecuador, the Achuar people. And it happened in probably a beautiful way. I don't know the details, but some Americans went down there to help, and they were very grateful for the help with the pollution and also bringing up the some of the people. They didn't have a written language. There was a lot that they got some help with. But what they did was, after a while, they said, "Thank you so much for helping us." But in their own language, they said, "In order to truly help us, you need to change the dream of the North." And that meant the capitalist, greed-based culture, the part of our culture that is so, like that. I think that's pretty obvious to most of us. That all started about 20 years ago, and Pachamama Alliance has a very specific vision of three important things that are all connected in our reality, which people often separate. So the environmentally sustainable, socially just, and a fulfilling and meaningful way of living that contributes to life is their foundation. And that's what drew me in, and that's what drew all the core members in. We have, over the past 4 years or so, given over 20, maybe closer to 25, symposiums in the Rochester area and surrounding community. And they can go from 2 to 5 hours. They're multimedia presentations. And they take people from an educational point of view about what's really happening, and that's very strong and helpful, and then leaves people at the end with this sense of hope and connection also with millions of people around the planet who are actually working for the same values. So there's a 2-hour symposium online now, which is right on pachamama.org. Anybody can take it, and it leads you through all of what I've just said in a beautiful way. And we're having if this is a good time, Evan, that we're having two symposiums coming up that are planned in the fall. One is with a group called Inquiry, Inquery, and the other one, and that's in September, and the other one will be in November through OASIS in more of a broken up a few weeks class. I'm not sure. I think it's 4 weeks. I'm not sure how they're doing that. But that is all available. If you're interested in this, please contact, you can email suestar.one, not dot, sorry.
I'll make sure we've got it online.
Okay.
The contact information.
Okay, that'll be great. So the point is that you can get on the newsletter and get all the information, and we send them out monthly, and we are really get a lot of good feedback as we cover a lot of issues in the area. And Move to Amend, you know, is in the local newsletter that we sent out this month because it happened very quickly.
All right. And so when it comes to Move to Amend, I want to let our audience know a couple of things here. We're going to be focusing a lot on money and politics this hour. First of all, you can call the program if you want to weigh in on money in politics and the various issues related to that. I reached out to a couple of people who have been, I don't know if prominent is the right word, but at least vocally opposed to campaign finance reform, those kind of things, to try to reach out and hear some other voices. They were not available this hour, but I did have a chance to pull a couple of clips that you'll hear from George Will. He has opposed a lot of the work that the folks like David Cobb and others are doing. David is very familiar with George Will's arguments, I'm sure, but you'll have a chance to hear some of that. But I would just encourage you, if you want to, no matter what side you're on this, to call the program later this hour to join the conversation. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. So David Cobb, Move to Amend got started, what, in 2009? And why?
Well, in 2009, a dozen of us got together because we saw the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission case bubbling in the lower courts. And we knew it was going to be a bad decision because of what the Roberts Court had done on a number of other issues. But we also recognized that this might be an opportunity to help to galvanize a growing discontent amongst the American people, not just on the left, but principled conservatives, moderates, liberals alike. This feeling that money was corrupting the political process, but beyond that, Evan, that these large transnational corporations were not just exercising power, that they were ruling over us. And those dozen of us had come out of a legal background, come out of a social change background, and what we had done was study the legal system and come to the conclusion that this doctrine of corporations being able to claim constitutional rights, and this is very important. We don't oppose the concept of corporate personality as a general matter for the purposes of suing or being sued, for the purposes of following the law, for the purposes of existing in society. What we do, however, oppose is the illegitimate court-created idea that corporate lawyers can argue that any laws attempting to control corporate conduct somehow violates the inherent and inalienable rights of a corporation, because a corporation is an artificial entity created under the political process. To cut to the chase, Evan, today the concept of corporate constitutional rights allows corporate lawyers to argue to overturn environmental protection laws, worker safety laws, public health laws, and yes, campaign finance laws. The reality is that we are no longer a self-governing people because of this legal doctrine. So the 12 of us came together to launch the idea that said, let's overturn not just this court decision, not just this one court case, but the legal doctrines upon which they're based. And it has grown phenomenally ever since.
David, I imagine when Mitt Romney made that comment during the campaign in 2011 in Iowa, you felt like that framed it pretty well, huh?
I really did, Evan, and I got to tell you, I know the person who actually asked that question and who recorded it, because I had literally about 6 to 8 weeks before traveled across Iowa. I'm on the road about half of my life, and I even said, like, and I don't take any credit for it because I didn't do it, but I did say, you have access to candidates for president here in Iowa in a way the rest of us could just dream of. And so we have actually taken that clip and used it as an example of how ordinary people can put candidates for office, whether they're president or Congress or state legislature or county commissioner, to actually get them to take a public position on this doctrine. Because here's the interesting thing, Evan. Polling data shows over 80% of the American people are with Move to Amend. Over 80%, and that number stays about the same whether you cross-reference it by political party affiliation, so Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, roughly about 80% agree with us. That number stays the same whether you cross-reference it for whether they self-identify as liberal, conservative, or moderate, about 80%. So this movement is actually one of the few moments in this polarized society where there is basic supermajority agreement. Corporations have too much power, and there's too much money in elections.
MoveToAmend.org lays out a number of things about the campaign, not the least of which is sort of your year-by-year goals. I wanted to ask you what the ultimate end goal is, David, and I would just tell listeners, again, you can kind of see it step by step where you've got benchmarks you want to aim for, but I want to ask you, if things go well, if you are successful, what is the ultimate result of Move to Amend?
Well, a genuinely democratic Republican form of government where we the people govern ourselves and individual human rights are still respected under law. And I know that may sound almost like a civics lesson, Evan, but it really is sincere. You see, we actually don't think that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Should actually be dictating the final end result. That actually should come out of the political process. What our 10-year strategic plan, and thank you for referencing it, is our public effort to anticipate what it will look like to win as we move forward. Our ultimate goal is, in fact, to amend the United States Constitution to abolish these court-created ideas. And for your listeners, I really want to underscore, that's what judicial activism means, by the way. When courts impose their will over the legislative process. That's what the court did in the creation of this doctrine of corporate constitutional rights. Frankly, it's what the court did in the creation of the idea that money is political speech in the Buckley versus Vallejo decision. These are court decisions, and ultimately what our end goal is to create a legal and political system where we, the people, are genuinely governing ourselves.
All right, David, I chose George Will because he's one of the most vocal opponents of this kind of thing, and I know you're familiar with his arguments, but I think that they do encapsulate some of the opposition to the extent that there is opposition on these issues. So let me kind of take it point by point. First of all, he said when it comes to money in politics, two things. He pointed to the recent Governor Bob McDonnell case in Virginia as saying, okay, $170,000 seems like a lot of money, but in that case, it didn't actually lead to any corruption, that the person offering gifts didn't get anything for it. And second of all, $2 billion seems like a lot of money, which is what the Obama and Romney campaigns spent in 2012. And yet $2 billion is how much Americans spend on Easter candy every year. And we're overblowing the problem. So when it comes to money, what do you say to those comments?
Well, first I would remind George Will that the founders themselves had a completely different conception of how the democratic process and how a Republican form of government should work. You know, I think it's really telling that to prove that money is not a problem is to use the example of quid pro or the appearance of corruption, but to say, see, there's not evidence of an actual bribe. In other words, yes, this $147,000 was given, no doubt about it. Yes, there was a hope that it would influence the election, but there's not direct evidence of it. Now, I just want to point out, Evan, that that undermines the confidence and the integrity of our entire electoral process. And that is a corrosive cancer within the body politic when ordinary people recognize, I think correctly, that we don't actually play by the same rules as the wealthy and the powerful. And I think that's really the issue. And before the Roberts Court, this concept of the need to prove actual corruption was not the standard. The standard was the integrity of the process itself. And at the end of the day, this idea that somehow you have to prove absolute quid pro quo, here is money for legislation before we can talk about corruption, I think is just patently absurd. We understand that. I mean, if we were going to play a baseball game, one team against another, and we knew that one side had given a gift of $147,000 to the umpire, I don't think we'd be comfortable with the game. And that's really the comparison. Lastly, we can talk about how much money is in the electoral process, but let's remember that $2 billion is mostly spent on corporate media for 30-second ads that are so much sound and fury signifying nothing. You know, I wish that we were actually investing that money in public forums and processes where ordinary people come together in thoughtful, deliberative conversation about how we want our society to operate. I would say that would be a great investment. But the reality is that it is these 30-second ads that are actually driving so much of the polarization, such that it's getting harder and harder to even have a respectful conversation about issues of importance. And I'm not being sycophantic when I lift up Connections as a program. I've done my due diligence. We need more like this. We need more opportunities to actually have genuine discourse, debate. And yes, we can have fierce debate, but let's do it coolly and civilly, respectfully, and dare I say lovingly, so that we can actually create a pluralistic society. And at the end of the day, money in elections prevents us from being able to do that.
David Cobb, my guest on the phone. He's the founder of Move to Amend, movetoamend.org, an event next Wednesday night. So a week from tonight, July 13th, and Padme Livingstone with the local chapter of the Pachamama Alliance. Where is that event? And tell us a little bit about what's coming up next Wednesday night.
Well, we invited David to host because basically the founders of Pachamama have worked out this whole clarity with David, which he can speak more to, about just how connected we are with our, and David's used the word process. Pachamama and Move to Amend are both really committed to not just the end goal, but how we get there. So we were happy to host David. He'll be here at 7:30 to speak to us, and he has a much more of a plan. I think he's given more thought to it than maybe we have, because we invited him, and we're happy to host Move to Amend and David. So it's 7:30 at the Unitarian Church, 220 Winton Road, and we hope people can come, you know, that they'll be interested enough, especially after this conversation, to come and check out, you know, live what's happening with this.
7:30 next Wednesday night, the First Unitarian Church on South Winton Road, for this event with David Cobb and Move to Amend. Now, let's listen to what Mr. Will says is his view that there is just evidence. This is ipso facto. If you want to know just how sinister this is, he used the word sinister, David Cobb. He says the fact that you've got to amend the Constitution is an indication that this is an anti-American enterprise to begin with. Let's listen to what George Will says.
People who say there is too much money in politics are necessarily saying three very sinister things. First, they are saying there is too much political speech. Second, they are saying that they know just the right amount of political speech. And third, they are saying that government should enforce the limits they want on the amount of political speech. That is, the government should regulate speech about the government. Over the last few decades, reformers have chipped away at the First Amendment guarantee of free speech. They've done it with various and sundry campaign finance laws, such as limiting the amount of money an individual can give to a candidate. But they're no longer satisfied with merely chipping away at the First Amendment. Now they want to take a sledgehammer to it. They admit that what they want, to restrict free speech, is incompatible with the Constitution. So for the first time in American history, reformers calling themselves progressives are proposing to change the First Amendment in order to empower Congress to decide the quantity, content, and timing of political speech.
All right, that's George Will. And so, David Cobb, let's take it from a couple of ways. Let's go back to that one of his first points. I think that series of three things that he feels are sinister can be summed up in his comment that this would allow the government to regulate speech about the government. And he sees an inherent flaw there. What do you say to that?
Well, Evan, what I would say is we have to remember that before the Supreme Court decision of Buckley versus Vallejo, for the entire foundation of this country, it was well understood that legislation to protect the integrity of the electoral process was well within the framework of what representative democracy was supposed to be. In fact, did you know that in most states it was a crime, not just an administrative fine, but literally it was a crime, a felony crime, to use corporate money to attempt to even influence elections. I use that as an example because that was the law up until the 1970s. And it was the Buckley versus Vallejo decision, again, imposed by the court, that changed that. So with all due respect, George Will is either ignorant of that history, which I do not believe he is, or, frankly, he is disingenuous and attempting to frame it in a way that postulates that the founders would be aghast. But actually, that's not true. The reality is that the concept of how our government is supposed to work is a representative form of government where we can hold our legislature accountable to laws. What we say, and if you look at the move to amend a two-part proposed amendment, is simply to clarify and correct the role of the judicial system in both the how to treat corporations as well as how to treat money. And at the end of the day, what we say is that local communities should be empowered and allowed to set campaign finance restrictions. States should make state campaign finance laws, and the federal government should make federal campaign finance laws. Because here's the point, Evan. Those are political decisions. Some people might say, let's just get all the money out of elections. Let's just have full publicly funded elections. Somebody else might say, no, let's let all the money in, but let's just disclose it so everybody knows where it's coming from. Somebody else might say, no, let's just say that you can only give money in an election if you can vote in that election. And here's the point. Every one of those would be a reasonable, rational position to take. One is, and we can have opinions about which one is better, but that should be a political decision. When we let the court decide whether or not a campaign finance law meets the merits of our Constitution, we've just turned we the people from sovereign citizens and actors in our own democratic republic into mere spectators. And I think, frankly, that George Will is turning us on its head. What he wants is to continue a process by which the wealthy and powerful get to fund the election process so that only candidates that continue to support the wealthy and powerful are ever on our ballots. And that's just wrong.
David, when he says government regulating speech about the government, in other words, he's raising this specter that I think is supposed to evoke the regimes that don't tolerate any speech that criticizes the government. And you don't have to look far around the world to find that even today. Maybe he would say, and reasonably so, when government has too much of a hand in regulating speech, in his words, money being speech, then eventually it's not hard to imagine a country in which the government would not tolerate criticism of government. It would protect incumbents and it would tamp down on government criticism. You don't see it that way, do you?
No, sir. And again, I think you just really identified the profound flaw in Mr. Will's entire premise. Money is not speech. The First Amendment, up until the court changed it, had always been understood to protect freedom of expression, freedom of the press. The move to amend approach would not change the First Amendment as it relates to freedom of the press at all. And as a journalist, Evan, I bet you're very familiar with the seminal case, New York Times versus Sullivan.
Of course.
Which is, right. And take a look at that. That case was all about the New York Times as a media distributor, content creator, etc. We would not change that at all. The concept, however, of funding elections You know, Evan, at the end of the day, we should understand that elections are the infrastructure of democracy. And just as we understand that the sewer system or the road system or libraries are our public processes that are paid for by the public so that we can all use them, frankly, that's how I think we ought to be looking at elections. This idea of allowing a small percentage of people, and when I say small, I mean about 5% of the country funds well over 90% of all of the elections. This is a crazy idea, and it's the reason that people across the political spectrum have lost confidence and faith in the electoral process, in the traditional established political parties, that we don't trust our government, we don't trust our court system, we don't trust our media. You know, there is if you want to talk about sinister, what I would say is the sinister corrosion of confidence in the democratic Republican form of government. And frankly, I think it's well deserved because most of us recognize that the country that we're living in is not a functioning democracy. It's an oligarchy, and we know it.
Let me grab our first phone call. This is Nancy in North Rose on with David Cobb from Move to Amend and Padme Livingstone from the Rochester Pachamama Alliance. Go ahead, Nancy.
Thank you, Evan. I really appreciate this program today, particularly. And I am also a volunteer facilitator with Pachamama Alliance, which is based on the principles of environmental sustainability, social justice, and a fulfilling life for citizens on this planet. And my concern, are many with this move to amend, is how it relates to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how it may be giving corporations, how corporations may be influencing our government to pass legislation that further erodes our citizens' rights and powers to govern themselves, and it disempowers people to make choices that are healthy and sustainable. So my question is about how it may also impact the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Nancy, thanks for the phone call. I'll ask David Cobb, what do you think about that?
Well, I think Nancy is correct. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is really like NAFTA on steroids. And, of course, in the Rochester area that once had a thriving economic base in large part because of manufacturing and technology, that economy in Rochester, New York, has experienced what it's like to live under the global-managed, global-controlled corporate trade agreements. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership is even worse. It literally gives corporations the authority and the right to sue local government, county government, state government, federal government. The United States government can be sued in secret tribunals to overturn our environmental protection laws, our worker safety laws, all on the basis, the corporate allegation that it would somehow, that a regulation might somehow impact the corporation's right to, wait for it, quote, expected profits. That's how bad the Trans-Pacific Partnership is. And it's also interesting to note that we are witnessing the same kind of grassroots mobilization across the left and the right and moderates alike who are opposed. It's only the leadership of the Democratic Party, the leadership of the Republican Party that are actually trying to promote the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The reality is that ordinary people, as soon as they are given a basic introduction to what the heck this secret negotiated pact would actually do and what's actually in it, the opposition is fierce and immediate.
But
so
David,
I share Nancy's concern.
Well, let me ask you then, David, do you think President Obama is bought on this issue?
What I would say is he is wrong on this issue. And at the end of the day, we're back to, do I think that some corporation gave him money or some wealthy individual gave him money in order to get the Trans-Pacific Partnership? I don't know. I doubt it. But that would be the functional equivalent of corruption quid pro quo. I don't think that's what happened. I do think that what has happened is that President Obama has an analysis around how corporations will somehow benefit ordinary people the same way that Bill Clinton did with the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And with respect, they are simply wrong. And I think that the economy of this country actually proves that they're wrong.
And David, I bring up President Obama there, not in isolation. I don't think listeners should assume that this issue is a right-left issue. You made the point that when you ask Americans, generally speaking, however you phrase it in polls, is there too much money in politics? Does money have too much influence? However you phrase it, as you say, most of the time, it doesn't really matter what political stripe you're from. You're likely to say there's too much money in politics right now. We know that. And yet, it's not really right-left. It's not a case of the Democratic Party as the champion of change here. You saw Larry Lessig. Larry Lessig is a name that still is not known by most Americans. He's a Harvard Law professor who tried to run for president in this cycle simply almost as a one-issue candidate. In fact, early on he was saying, elect me, we'll get money out of government as best we can, however it was devised, and I'll resign. My vice president could take over, whether it's Elizabeth Warren or whoever. That's how zeroed in on money and politics he was. And the Democratic Party, I think a lot of people feel like, pushed him to a point where he couldn't even get into a debate early on.
That's correct. That's correct. And I think it's worth pointing out, again, Larry Lessig is a Harvard professor. Who is in academic circles, in campaign finance reform circles, in good government circles, is well known as a champion. And he was not even allowed to participate in any of the debates. At the time where there were 9-10 Republicans on the stage, the Democrats refused to even allow him onto any platform whatsoever. And I think that's an example of the fact of how the leadership of the Democratic Party is actually conducting itself. And I want to say it this way, Evan. I believe that principled liberals have been lied to and sold out by the leadership of the Democratic Party, who were taking their money and their marching orders ultimately from the wealthy, the powerful, the corporations, and the banks. But I also want to quickly point out that I believe that principled conservatives have been lied to and sold out by the leadership of the Republican Party, who were taking their money and their marching orders from the same banks, wealthy individuals, and corporations in America. This concept that Move to Mend is championing is actually one that can unite people of all political stripes, all affiliations, all ideologies, and that's the reason that we're winning. And it's not just random polling samples, Evan. You know, we've put this on the ballot over 350 times across this nation. We've won every single one of them. And yes, that includes San Francisco and Boston and Madison, you know, the liberal bastions. But we also won in Salt Lake City, Utah. We were on the ballot in Waukesha, Wisconsin, the hometown of Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker, where they haven't voted for anybody but a Republican for president or Congress in over 40 years. Move to Mend was on the ballot there. We won 70% of the vote. Evan, we were on the ballot in Montana, a statewide initiative in one of the most politically, culturally conservative places in this country. We won 74% of that vote. So it's demonstrably true that ordinary people are actually coming together under this banner.
To David's point about keeping Larry Lessig out of the debate, the Republicans had somebody named Jim Gilmore in a debate at one point, who was allegedly a governor of some state. I'm not sure he ever polled at any more than his immediate family and friends, but he was allowed in the Republican debates.
Correct.
Larry Lessig was not allowed to debate with Democrats. And so anyway, we are late for our only break of the hour. Let's get our only break of the hour. We'll come back with David Cobb, who's the founder of Move to Amend. You can learn more at movetoamend.org. Also in studio with me is Padme Livingstone, who is a facilitator with the Rochester Pachamama Alliance. They're bringing David Cobb to town 1 week from tonight for an event. That's Wednesday, July 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church. That's on South Winton Road. David is going to be talking about these issues and more. And we'll come back if you've got more to weigh in on. I've got emails if you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, more bands are seeking to ban cell phones at live concerts and musical performances. They say fans should experience the music live, not through a screen. And some bands are worried about copyright and protecting their work. We'll talk about the trend and whether we are addicted to our technology next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Amanda emails to say, I find your guest compelling, but I wish you had a sparring partner for him. Amanda, I do too. I reached out to a number of people locally who have opposed many forms of campaign finance reform, defended money as speech. No one was available to come in to kind of be the sparring partner for David Cobb this hour, which is why I pulled a few bites from George Will, who is a conservative columnist and a longtime opponent of this kind of reform. Let's listen to one more. George Will making the case for money as speech. Here's what he has to say about that.
Those who advocate restricting how much money we can contribute to candidates or how much money candidates can spend on campaigns always say the same thing. They say we are only restricting money and money is not speech. To see how silly this distinction is, consider the following. The New York Times constantly says that money is not speech and therefore the spending of money can be restricted without restricting freedom of speech. But suppose conservatives controlled Congress and said to the New York Times, we, of course, would never restrict the freedom of the Times to practice journalism, heaven forbid. We are only going to restrict the amount of money the Times can spend on gathering the news and distributing its newspapers, the amount it can spend on journalists, paper, ink, printing presses, delivery trucks, advertisements, and so on. Do you think the New York Times would be content with this? Would the Times say, that's fine, because you are only regulating our right to spend money, not our right to speak? No, the Times would strenuously object. It would say, money is indispensable for making our speech effective. That is true, and not just for the Times.
Yeah, that's George Will. Go ahead, David Cobb. What do you think?
Well, first, I want to let you know, Evan, that I would be very eager at some point in the future to come back on at a time that is mutually convenient for a, quote, sparring partner.
There you go. Of course.
Delve into this.
Yes,
live.
Sir.
And secondly, I think it's disingenuous again. At the end of the day, look at the comparison that Mr. Will is trying to make. Like, The question is whether campaign finance expenditures can be regulated. That's all. At the end of the day, does he believe then that no campaign finance laws are ever legitimate? Because that's actually what he seems to be arguing. And that's an argument that before the Roberts Court, no one, not even the Heritage Foundation or the Cato Institute, had ever actually argued. It's where we're headed, however. And again, it's not just the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission case. Let's remember that the Citizens United case literally dismantled the McCain-Feingold law. You know, John McCain, Republican, Russ Feingold, Democrat, a bipartisan agreement on how to protect the integrity of federal elections. It had overwhelming majority support, not only of the leadership of the two parties, but also of the American people. The one critique that actually social sciences pointed to at the time were the American people didn't think it went far enough. The Supreme Court said that law was treating the wealthy, corporations, and unions like a, wait for it, oppressed minority, and that therefore it was up to the court to protect this perceived oppressed minority from being able to influence elections. Well, all of us recognize that the idea that there's not enough money in elections is just an absurdity. So at the end of the day, the only question is whether we think we, the people, are actually able to, through our elected representative form of government, actually make laws to protect the integrity of our electoral process. And that's the reason that so many people across all political stripes, all political parties are actually joining us.
I've got a pile of email to try to get through, and let me go ahead and read a few of them. David writes to the program and says, "Dear Evan, your guest says we the people should govern. I agree. However, for that to happen, the people need to take their responsibilities as citizens seriously. I don't see that happening nearly enough. In my experience working on local political campaigns, I found that few people take the trouble to inform themselves about issues. That is why they are vulnerable to being influenced by the 30-second political ads your guest has complained about. Changing laws affecting campaign finance cannot correct for the failure of people to fulfill their responsibilities. Pogo and his swamp creature friends got it right. We have met the enemy, and he is us." That is from David, different David, David Rakov in Irondequoit. David Cobb, what do you think?
Well, I couldn't agree more. The reality is that people feel disempowered. But I guess what I would say is this. I don't think that that is a reflection of cynicism or lack of concern. I think that it is a function of the fact that people don't actually feel empowered. So I'm not suggesting for a moment that the Move to Mend approach is a fix-all for everything. We're actually trying to inspire people into the kind of engaged citizenship that David would agree with. So, again, I don't think this is the only thing to do, but I think it is an important thing to do.
Email from a listener named Abby. She says she joined the conversation a little late, and she was curious to know two things. How much traction has Move to Amend gotten with actual elected representatives? And I think, by the way, David Cobb, what she's essentially saying is, what's your route to victory with this, and are you on your way in any form? That's how you doing on the metrics? She's also asking, for those who missed it, for you to lay out exactly what a better system would look like. So let's start with what you want, again, for Abby and anyone else listening who missed it earlier this hour, what Move to Amend is trying to accomplish, and then you can explain how much traction you've gotten so far.
So, Abby, thank you for the question. You and every other listener can go to our website, movetoamend.org/plan, and you will see our written 10-year strategic plan to victory to culminate in a constitutional amendment to abolish two legal doctrines created by the courts. One, the idea that corporations have constitutional rights, and two, the idea that money is political speech. So, that plan, by the way, we're on track. It's a 10-year plan. Last congressional session, we were able to introduce our proposed amendment into Congress. We had three co-sponsors. This session, the very next session, it's been introduced again. We have 20 co-sponsors, including Evan and Abby and all other listeners, a Republican Congressperson Walter Jones from North Carolina has actually joined us. He's actually a Tea Party favorite. It's really interesting because Walter Jones and David Cobb probably disagree on most policy matters, but on the principle of self-government, we're in agreement. And again, I want to stay focused for a moment on this idea. The debate around policy matters should be engaged vigorously. It should be engaged passionately. That is what a Democratic-Republican form of government is all about. The question is whether our Constitution can be used to overturn political decisions on the basis that corporations have constitutional rights or money is speech. At the end of the day, this does not impose an answer to that question of policy matters. It simply makes clear that those are political decisions that should be resolved through the political process. So by every objective measurement, Move to Mend is getting larger, stronger, and better organized, and yes, up to 20 congressional sponsors. But in addition to that, we've gone from 12 people in 2010 when we formally launched to over 407,000 people. We have about 75 local affiliates all across the country. I hope that folks from Rochester will come out next Wednesday and ponder how to either build a relationship with the Pachamama Alliance and or maybe we start a Move to Mend affiliate in Rochester, maybe something else. But at the end of the day, this movement is growing, and it's growing by ordinary folks coming together in a common approach.
Padme Livingstone is the facilitator for the Rochester Pachamama Alliance. It's bringing David Cobb to Rochester next Wednesday night. And Padme, you've said that as you look around right now in the political climate, you see a lot of viciousness. You see a lot of polarization. And you're looking at a long-range solution here. I mean, David's talked about a 10-year plan with this. So amidst that, as you perceive the viciousness, why, you know, why focus on these long-range solutions to our problem?
Well, it's a very personally heartfelt connection that I feel with not being alone with the values that we carry into this, that we work with compassion and empathy, and we cultivate a sense of awe for this beautiful world. So we get back to the roots of the fundamentals of being human, and we carry that into whatever we're doing. And certainly, the more we act and behave and collaborate and work with other human beings on such an important matter, we're living the world that we want. And so it's a beautiful thing, you know, for me and for the other people in Pachamama, for that sense of connection with humanity rather than the politics that is such a mess.
Let me try to squeeze in a few more listener emails. Herman writes to the program and says, passing a constitutional amendment is difficult and can take years. In the meantime, if Judge Merrick Garland is confirmed as a Supreme Court justice, what do you think the chances are that Citizens United will be overturned? And wouldn't that be the quickest way to reduce money in politics and make McCain-Feingold operative again? David Cobb?
Well, I think that the answer is probably. I mean, I want to be very candid. We can't know exactly how what a new Supreme Court would do, but the answer is probably correct. Again, we're not saying that this is the only thing to do, but I do want to point out that the question of how to make systemic transformational change requires an engaged mass citizenship. The idea that if we only had the right president or we only had the right Supreme Court configuration, I think, actually starts from a premise of disempowerment. So Move to Mend actually is going about the business of educating, organizing, agitating, and building a genuine mass movement. It's not either or, it's both and. So probably, to answer the specific question as proposed, probably that would be a way to get back to pre-Citizens United. But let me ask, Evan, to the hypothetical question. Does anybody believe that in 2009, before that Citizens United decision, that we, the people, were literally governing ourselves? Do we think that Citizens United began the problem of corporate power or money in elections? So for us, the victory would not mean merely overturning one Supreme Court decision. A victory would be a process by which we, the people, are building a pluralistic society that is actually based on the concept that we can collectively engage in discourse and debate, but ultimately govern ourselves collectively together.
All right, down to our last 2 minutes. Email from Robert. He says he calls George Will a snake oil salesman. He says he's a prime example of what is wrong with the world. And Robert says, George Will is a salesman for the elite. If money equals speech, then does lack of money equal less speech? Robert, I don't want to speak for George Will. I think he would say money can be speech, but that's not the only form of speech, and you don't have to have money to speak. It's just one form of many forms of speech, and why limit speech of any kind? And so, David Cobb, how would you respond to that?
I would say that money is not speech. It is an amplifier of speech. And the current system allows the wealthy and the powerful to buy speakers that are so big it drowns out the rest of us, and we know it. At the end of the day, let's actually have a process where ordinary people are able to talk to each other, find out where our agreements and our disagreements are. And what I have found is that there are actually a lot more agreement than there is disagreement when we get the amplified voice of the rich and the powerful and the oligarchs out of our ears, and we actually talk to our friends and families and neighbors, including neighbors that we think we disagree with.
All right. More to learn. If you want to learn more about this, it's movetoamend.org. 30 seconds left here, David. Next Wednesday night, 7:30 at the First Unitarian Church on South Winton Road in Rochester for the event. What's going to happen next Wednesday night?
We're going to spend about 45 minutes in an analysis on the history of where this concept came from of corporate constitutional rights and money is speech. Then we're going to talk about what can we do in Rochester in partnership with the Pachamama Alliance about building a community of people who are coming together to make the experiment of a democratic republic a reality in this community.
David, thanks for taking the time for the program, and we'll see you in Rochester next Wednesday, a week from tonight.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Padme.
Thank you, David.
David is the founder and outreach director of Move to Amend and a former Green Party presidential candidate in 2004. Padme Livingstone, facilitator for the Rochester Pachamama Alliance. Thank you as well, Padme, for coming in and helping educate the community on this event that's coming up. And again, no matter where you stand on this, they're trying to bring in a lot of voices and bring the community together on it. So thank you so much, Padme, for being here. To those who said, great show, wish you had a sparring partner. Again, we'll do it again, and we'll continue that outreach and try to find voices from all sides. Short break, more connections next.